Hey everyone, welcome in to a new edition of the Woj Pod. My guest, All-NBA center, Rudy Gobert of the Utah Jazz. Rudy, how are you?
I'm great. You know, it could be better, but happy to be with the team right now.
The knee injury, Rudy, you suffered Saturday night against Miami. You've been through some injuries in the past. Is that one where you know right away, I think something happened here, or you wait till you get the MRI or until doctors go through it?
I really felt something happened, you know, but I thought it could have been worse. To be honest, I was happy that my ligaments were fine. You know, I have a bone bruise, and it could have been way worse, especially when I looked at the video. Luckily, I had the reflex of lifting my foot up at the last moment, and I avoided the worst.
You were upset with Miami's Dion Waiters initially. Was that emotion at the beginning, or do you still look back and go, I don't like the way that happened?
I don't like the way that happened. That's true. Then, I can't be mad at someone forever. I think now it's time for me to, after a few days, I'm just focused on getting back and focus on my team, you know. But, yeah, it's frustrating, you know, when I worked so hard this summer to be ready this year, and when some displays happen, it's frustrating because myself and my team get penalized from it, you know.
Do you ever feel more at your size being more susceptible to those kinds of injuries, where somebody comes, whether they come underneath you? That was different. That was more of a loose ball setting. Mm-hmm. But because you can be such a target in your body build, do you feel like you're more at risk for plays like that than maybe a 6'6", 6'8 guy?
I mean, for sure. You know, I have longer levers, you know, so longer legs. So it's, you know, it's harder for me, I would say, to get lower than a guy that's smaller than me. And, on that one, I was looking away. I was kind of looking at the ball, and I didn't really, there was nothing happening under me, you know, so I didn't really think someone was going to dive at this moment, and I wasn't really prepared for it.
Where your team is right now, listen, you're always needed here. You were second team All-NBA player last year. But when the team is struggling and now to be out, if it's potentially a month, 3 weeks, a month, you've seen how the team has played without you. They've struggled to get offense and certainly even defensively. Is it just the timing of it make it even more frustrating where this group is without you?
It is a little bit frustrating because I think this was a time for us. We're going through a rough time, and it was the moment that I feel like we're about to figure it out, you know, as a team. And it's kind of, I would say, slow us down a little bit, but at the same time, I see positivity, and I think it's good because guys gonna have to stick together even more now, and I think it's gonna make everyone better, you know, defensively and also offensively. And whenever I come back, you know, I think it's gonna give us even a bigger lift, and everyone's gonna, you know, feed of that energy.
You guys had built an identity. I think the last couple of years, this group, it grew together with you and Gordon Hayward, and to a point where last year you beat the Clippers. And there was just an identity about how you played under Quinn. You know, defensively it got better. Offensively, as your talents grew, Gordon got better. You saw the team be able to do more things. Did it feel like going back to square one this year? Does it feel like when Gordon left and there were other moves you could have, I know you would have made if Gordon had stayed to try to really contend. Mm-hmm. Did it feel like starting over this year, or somewhere in between where you had been? And
no, I didn't feel like starting over. I think, like I said, you know, we've built something since Quinn got here, you know, in the last few years, and we got better every year. And I mean, like I said, players come and go, and it happens, you know. Sometimes important players go, and I feel like it didn't change our identity. You know, our identity was defense, and offensively was unselfishness, and we kept the same. Then, of course, you know, the style of play was a little different. You know, we brought Ricky, we brought some guys that are more. Ricky is more playmaker and push the pace. So we're a slow paced team, but now we try to, you know, push the pace a little bit. So it was some little adjustments to make, and I think we're gonna make them.
When you looked at your team and how it was growing together. Quinn was growing as an NBA coach. You were growing into an NBA star. Gordon was growing into an all-star. What did you imagine was going to happen with that core? How did you see the future with all of you together?
My goal is to win the championship, and it still is. You know, like I said, it doesn't really matter who. I mean, it matters because I want to win games, but whoever is on my team, my goal is to win a championship. So I'm going to do my hardest and, you know, put my heart into it and make sure we build the right way and try to do that.
When you think last year, becoming second team All-NBA and all, you've been an all-defensive player, when you were a teenager and you were trying to figure out the sport and grow into it, did you ever imagine this for yourself?
I mean, I wouldn't say I wasn't really picturing myself, but I always say that I wanted to be a star. You know, I wanted to win a championship. I wanted to be an all-star. And you know, it's been, I always try to take it step by step, you know, and I don't try to rush anything or even though I'm not very patient, but, I always, you know, try to get better step along the way. It's a long process and the main thing was to keep believing, and I still have very high expectations for my team and myself.
Well, you grew up in France. Your dad had come to the States. He had played at Marist College. Actually, Jeff Bauer, who's the GM of the Pistons, was an assistant coach, I think, at Marist when your dad played there. Did you play as a young kid because he had played? Was it like, is that what got you starting to play the game? Was because, well, my dad played, I'll play, let me try it.
Not really. I mean, I did a lot of sports before. I did some, I think, track and field, boxing, some karate. I think one time I even did some ping pong, but I only went once because it wasn't really fun. And yeah, just randomly, you know, I just started basketball, and maybe inconsciously, you know, because my dad played, I wanted to play and, you know, maybe be better, but I think I just, I just started it and I liked it.
Did you box? Did you have fights or did you just train on a bag?
I was practicing. I didn't do any like major competition because we were a little young, but, that was right before basketball actually. So I think I did like a year or a year and a half of boxing and then I cut my hand. Not boxing, an accident, and for whatever reason, I didn't go boxing, and I just started basketball.
Did you like it?
Yeah. I still do. I mean, I still boxing every summer. You know, I like it, and it's different. You know, I like the competitiveness, I like the focus, and I mean, no one likes to get hit in the face, but I like the sport.
How did people get at you when you're assuming you were bigger than guys just try to get inside on you? Was the goal always to just sort of stay away and reach? And because your reach would be different than anybody else who you'd probably be fighting with.
I mean, the only chance is to really get in my body, you know. And this summer, I was funny because I was training with a very good boxing coach in Utah, and he's trained some UFC fighters and some boxers. And now now he's kind of stepped down a bit and he trains kids more. I was telling him to train me like I'm really gonna fight, not just like I'm gonna do cardio and come and go, you know. So I was going there doing one-on-one with him, and he was teaching me how to use my reach and how to make sure people don't get into my space, and I got a lot better at it.
Footwork, is that as much as anything that might carry over to basketball, of just being light on your feet, being able to move?
Exactly. You know, I think in every sport, that's the thing that the fan doesn't really look at is the footwork, and that's the most important. You know, it's everything starts from the feet.
When did you think, hey, I think I'm pretty good at basketball, I think I have a chance to be really good? When was that for you? It didn't come quickly. You didn't dominate right away as a young player in France.
I didn't. It's funny because I didn't. Even though I wasn't dominating, I always thought inside me that I was going to be a great player. And I knew it was, I mean, I didn't want it to take long. I wanted everything now. But at the same time, I knew it wasn't going to be easy. And every time I had failures or deceptions, I was using that as motivation. And, you know, it just made me stronger mentally. And either when I was 13 years old or when I was you know, 21 and I didn't get drafted as high as I wanted. It always made me stronger, and now I feel like I'm mentally, you know, so strong that, you know, deception is just, I'm just always positive, you know, and I'm always using that to get better.
Evan Fournier with Orlando was one of your early close friends. Mm-hmm. Was he the first really good player you were around as a kid? Was he the first real talented guy?
Evan was a little different because he was really dominating as a young age. And he was, since he was 12 years old, everyone knew he was the best player of his age, you know, I would say the generation 92, because we both born in 92. Me, I was kind of different, you know, I was like, under the radar, you know, no one really knew me at this time. And every year I had to grind a little bit. I got to Cholet when I was 15. And then my first national team was, I was 18 years old, and I wasn't even national team in under 16. And, I wasn't even in the national team groups, before that, you know, so it was really a long and slow process.
When you were a young player in France and you looked at the national team and how it was viewed, I guess Tony Parker was the star, right, of the national team. And who else was there to look up to?
I mean, there's been many guys, you know, that I looked up to, but Tony and Boris definitely, you know.
Boris Diaw.
Yeah. I would say they opened the path, you know. Even guys like Dirk, like Pau Gasol, I mean, I know in the U.S., Americans, they view Europe as kind of like one country, you know, so,
right.
So it kind of opened, you know, these guys made us respected. And then the scout, I mean, I've seen more and more scouts coming out and try to find the next Tony Parker or try to find the next Dirk, you know, and I think that really helped us to get, established as young talents.
Was there a label that you think, or a stereotype that you found with NBA teams or Americans about what defined a French player?
I mean, I think there's labels, you know, I mean, there's always stereotypes, whether in basketball or in life, you know, when you see a country and you've never been there, you just have the picture in your head of the country that what you see in the news or when you see maybe on social media, or, you know, you don't, until you go there, you don't really know what it is. And it's the same with players, you know. I think maybe we were pursued as soft, or maybe not talented enough, or maybe people were scared to, you know, to, because players in France don't go to college like in the US, and it's a different system. Maybe they were more confident. The GMs were more confident of getting players that they know and they watch all year.
The pride that your core has of. You mentioned you've played on a national team, Tony Parker, Boris, Noah has played, Fournier. You look at your generation and it's, you know, Spain has had a great national team. I'm sure you and Ricky Rubio now have probably, you played against him a lot, I'm sure, and beyond the NBA. But
yeah.
I would just think this group that you've had has maybe achieved more than any in history, that there's got to be some pride with that, what you guys have done together.
For sure, you know, and like I said, you know, there's national team and there's NBA and there's national team, you know, it's two different things, but I love both, you know, because national team is, I mean, you defend your country, you really play to win. I mean, you don't go there to make money, you don't go there to waste your time, you go there to win, and it's just always great experience, you know, and that's what, to me, what I'm a competitor, and that's what it's about. You know, it's about winning, and it's about, you know, when you retire, you say, okay, I've accomplished this with this group, you know, and it's memories, it's things that you never forget.
I think the greatest quote I've ever gotten from a basketball player after a game, it was in the Olympics when Nick Batum went after Navarro. He punched him in the nuts. It was late in the game. And so I went to Nick after the game and I said, "Why'd you do it?" And he said, "I wanted to give him something to flop about."
Yeah.
It was one of the great, you know, like, didn't say, "Oh, that's not really what I did." It was not, you know, the fierceness of international competition. Like, people here just don't, I don't know that they respect what it means to you guys to all play, right?
Not really. I mean, that's why, you know, I think we don't have the same vision about what it means, you know, to compete and to win. And I think here is maybe people look at it more as a business. It is a business, and you have to, I mean, we all know it's a business, but to me, competition is above everything. You know, it's something that you can buy. It's just like, you know, it's some feelings that you can buy. You know, it's just different.
How do you guys look at the USA national team? They've been dominant here the last few groups once they sort of got it back together several years ago. If there's ever going to be a team that beats the U.S. in a one-game setting, I mean, I've always felt like Spain would have a chance, that you would have a chance, that I always thought it would be a team that's been together a long time, that's not intimidated, that's used to playing these guys. Do you still imagine a scenario where you have all your guys at the Olympics, you're all together, and there's a one game where you're equipped to do it?
We are. And, you know, I deeply believe that it's going to happen. You know, my dream is to win an Olympic gold medal with the French national team. I mean, one of my dreams. And, you know, hopefully we can, 2020, we can put a team together and try to compete with them.
How much is that talked about? I think some teams are just defeated before they even play them. I'm not sure they believe they can. Is that, as much as anything, just being able to believe we're good enough to do it?
Yeah, that's a mindset, you know, either in life or in sport, and I don't really like that mindset. I think, like I said, the body can, if your mind doesn't believe it, your body will never accomplish it. And, you know, every athlete, it starts with a dream, right? And if you don't believe it, who gonna believe it? And if you believe it, and you know, and we put our mind and as a team, you know, we come out and we play hard and we play our game. You never know what can happen. And you know, there've been so many upset in sport. Like I said, you never know.
What if hiring could be easier, more streamlined, and less time-consuming? So even when you're busy, you could still be smart about the way you hire. With ZipRecruiter, you can post your job to over 100 of the web's leading job boards with just one click. So you can rest easy knowing your job is being seen by the right candidates. Then ZipRecruiter puts its smart matching technology to work, actively notifying qualified candidates about your job within minutes of posting, so you receive the best possible matches. That's why ZipRecruiter is different. Unlike other hiring sites, ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on the right candidates finding you. It finds them. You can even get a head start on the interview process by adding screening questions to your job post to help identify the most qualified candidates, so you don't have to waste time sorting through a stack of resumes to find the perfect fit. No wonder 80% of employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site in just a day. And the easy-to-use ZipRecruiter dashboard lets you manage your hiring process from start to finish and all in one place. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by growing businesses of all sizes and industries to find the most qualified job candidates with immediate results. And right now, my listeners can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, for free. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/Woj, W-O-J. That's ZipRecruiter.com/Woj, W-O-J. One more time to try it for free. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/Woj. Let's talk about hard work leading to being the best. Did you know that the tip of a Gillette razor blade is measured on an atomic scale, meaning their blade edges are thinner than a single brain cell? Over 1,000 craftsmen and women in Boston are busy making your blades. Meanwhile, another team is putting your blades through more than 60 extremely strict and precise quality checks. Fail just one of those tests and it doesn't leave the factory. In other words, the hardworking people at Gillette never stop working to make your blades better. And now that includes the price tag. You can get Gillette blades at their lowest price in years. See for yourself at GilletteOnDemand.com. Gillette, the best a man can get. Pricing applies to select products and is at the sole discretion of the retailer. The year before you came into the draft, there were mock drafts. You kind of came out of nowhere at that Adidas, I think it was the Adidas European camp, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think Dennis Lindsay was there, who ended up drafting you in Utah. Had you felt that was your coming out, that you played at a high level in front of NBA guys for the first time, and like you remember doing it and saying, this is it for me, like they can see now? Was it that dramatic for you?
I remember that, I mean, that was my first Treviso camp, and I was playing with the national team. And I've seen all these scouts, and I got excited, you know, and I really wanted to show that I remember I was watching guys, a few guys in college that were supposed to be better than me, and I just wanted them to see that, you know, I could be better than them.
And I think then you weren't in the draft, you didn't enter your name, and then some of the mock drafts I think had you as high as 2-3 going into the season. And yeah. Then you had kind of a rough year.
Yeah.
What happened in that year that maybe caused you to take a step back in their eyes?
I mean, first of all, I think I had a few injuries, you know, early in the season. I sprained my ankle a few times, and I was going back, and then I think I sprained it again. And until really December, you know, it was pretty rough, rough stretch for me. And then I really started, you know, I said, okay, I try to get a chef, you know, in Cholet, I found one. So I got a chef, I stopped going out, you know, I was really focused, and I was trying to, I say, I'm not going to have many chances, you know, the NBA, if you miss it, then it's over. And I really, you know, then when I came back, it was hard because, the coach, I mean, the rotations, I was kind of, he wasn't playing me as much as I wanted, and I was playing about 15 minutes, 20 minutes sometime. I wasn't finishing the games, and, you know, I really had to, you know, prove him my worth, and which I did. But when I started playing 30 minutes, it was the end of the season, and I think we missed the playoff by one game. And so after that, I was just, you know, focusing on the draft.
You went to the pre-draft, you went to the combine in Chicago, and that didn't go well either, right?
Yeah. Same thing. When I went to the combine, and I didn't even know that we were supposed to play. I thought it was just going to be measurement and individual workout. And so I didn't really, I mean, I wasn't in basketball shape. I was just in shape, like I said, I was just there to do my measurements and do those individual workouts. And then they said, okay, let's play. So I did it, you know, but that wasn't what I expected.
And you got physically, I think some guys physically who are stronger had their way with you, and everyone's watching.
Yeah. Right? Yeah, exactly. You know, everyone's watching. And, I mean, I wasn't feeling bad. You know, I didn't think it was like the end of the world, but I knew that, you know, I didn't do my best, but I was still confident I was going to get drafted, and I was going to be, you know, that I was going to have my opportunity to become a very good player.
Dennis Lindsay talks about that workout you had with the Jazz that really opened their eyes. Did you feel like the workout you had with teams, the Jazz one, was any better, or something happened that day that gave them a window into you that others hadn't gotten to see?
I think it was one of my best. I don't think it was really my... I don't think this workout was really better than the others, but I think it was one of my best for sure. And you know, there was a few plays, like I blocked a few shots that were pretty impressive, and I showed some things in the one-on-one offensively, and I think you know, they, more than anything, they fell in love with my mentality. You know, I think the day before I went to the gym by myself, you know, just because I enjoyed doing that. You know, it was my first time in NBA facilities, so I was really enjoying going to the gym every time the day before the workout. And I think that's really what they liked about me.
When you first came, was it your ability to block shots, protect the rim? Is that what you kind of knew at that time? I can show them I can do that. Like, you were growing in other areas, but the ability to, listen, when you have the wingspan you have, you're going to be able to block shots. But there's more to it than that. There's a mentality. What are you born with that? Do you learn timing? Do you learn the anticipation of being a great shot blocker? Like, what all goes into it?
I think it's a mix of a few things. You know, first of all, it's pride. I mean, if you can be athletic, you can have the greatest timing in the world. If you don't have the pride, you know, you won't have the will to go and try to make a play and block a shot. So I think it starts with that. And then, of course, there is the length, there is the timing, there is athleticism, you know, all, it's a mix, you know, and when you put all that together, you usually you have a pretty good shot blocker. And my goal, like I said, is not to be a shot blocker, it's to be a defender.
When you're in an offensive zone, when shots are going in and your guys are making shots, there's like a zone you get in offensively. The basket looks bigger. Do you get into that place as a shot blocker where it feels like you're just going to get every, you're getting everyone? It's like you're.
It does, and everything slows down, and I know what guy's going to do. It's kind of, you know, I get in the zone, you know, and I know what guy's going to do before they do it, and. And I really, I mean, I don't really think anymore. You know, I'm just, I'm talking to my teammates. I'm talking all the time, but I'm really talking to my teammates and I'm, you know, and I know that no one's going to score. I mean, I know that no one, they have to shoot a three because if they come to the paint, no one's going to score.
Dennis Lindsay had always sort of said like he wanted you to be the Jazz's Bill Russell. Do you ever watch tape of Russell, how he blocks shots? Are there guys who defensively who, you go back and say, I like the way they did it, or I there's something from history that I was able to pull from.
I mean, there's different style. You know, I don't really respect guys that block shots. There's different players that was doing other things. Yeah. And I really respect guys that do the things that matters, you know. So sometimes, usually the things that you don't see on the stats, and that's the thing that kind of is frustrating in today's NBA, that everyone looks at the stats, but they don't look at what the player does to help his team win. Okay, there's the plus minus, but plus minus, I mean, you can come in the game and you play at the center and, you know, I don't know, you point guard, turn the ball over two times and you minus six, but you haven't done anything, you know, so sometimes it's, you know, people need to look, take a closer look and see, what you do to help your team. And, you know, that's the frustrating thing about today's NBA.
Is it different than even when you got in this league? Is it become more of a highlight-driven league? Is it become more focused on, you're on social media, you see what people pay attention to, certain kind of plays. Does it impact the way guys approach team play? Do you think it influences players?
For sure. I mean, guys think about their marketing. They think about, you know, the people, the family, they all shoot the ball, you should shoot more. You know, so yeah, we're fighting that. I think every team is fighting that, you know, and I think, you know, I'm lucky to be in an organization that, you know, have a coach that really prone unselfishness and team basketball. But yeah, I think every team is fighting that, and, you know, like I said, the goal is really to win. And you're going to have to score, you're going to have to shoot, of course, to win, but I think when you do it as a team, everyone is dialed in and does the little thing that you don't see on the stats to really win, you're going to be a better team.
Buying tickets online for sports and concerts has never been easier thanks to SeatGeek. They've created an amazing app and website that makes ticket buying easier than it's ever been. They pull all the tickets available on other sites into one place so you never miss a deal, and more importantly, you aren't wasting time. You can even set alerts for upcoming events, and they'll let you know if ticket prices fall. And even better, every ticket on SeatGeek is ranked based on value, so you can immediately find underpriced seats. And before you buy, you can use SeatGeek's detailed maps to see the view from your seat. I've got the SeatGeek app on my phone, and I use it all the time. What I like most about SeatGeek is that it's always honest and upfront about the price. So you get to see the full ticket price from start to finish, and you're never surprised with big fees when you check out. Now, here's the best part about SeatGeek for all of you out there listening to the Woj Pod. My listeners who make their first SeatGeek purchase get a $20 rebate. And to get it, all you have to do is download the free SeatGeek app, go to the settings tab, and click add a promo code. Then enter promo code Woj, W-O-J. SeatGeek will then send you $20 after you've made your first ticket purchase. It does not get any easier than that. So download the free SeatGeek app and enter promo code Woj, W-O-J, today. Support for the Woj Pod comes from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. They understand that a home plays a big role in your life and family. That's why they created Rocket Mortgage. Rocket Mortgage gives you the confidence you need when it comes to buying a home or refinancing your existing home loan. It's simple. Allowing you to fully understand all the details and be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. Whether you're looking to buy your first home or your 10th, with Rocket Mortgage, you get a transparent online process that gives you the confidence to make an informed decision. It's convenient. Our trusted partners allow you to share your financial information with Rocket Mortgage at the touch of a button. And in addition to getting a real mortgage approval in minutes, you can even adjust the rate and length of your loan in real time and make sure you're getting the right solution for you. Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Apply simply, understand fully, mortgage confidently. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/woj. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states, NMLSconsumerAccess.org, number 3030. Why has your relationship, sort of the partnership you've had with Quinn Snyder, why has it worked for you?
Well, first of all, I think the thing I like about him is that he is here to win, you know, and he's really, I think we, in a way, got the same personality, is that we know that it's not easy, but we want to win more than anything else. And, we're ready to do, to sacrifice a lot of things to win. And I like the fact that I think he saw that in me, and he, from the beginning, even when he got here, I wasn't really playing, and he believed in me. And the first time I talked to him, you know, I could tell that he watched me a lot, and he saw that in me.
The initial growth you had with him, and you said, like, the one thing you know about Quinn is he's got great attention to detail. Like you said, he had already watched a lot of you before. When you're a player who's developing, who's trying to find his way in the league, what does that mean to find somebody who, because sometimes guys will just say, oh, I believe in you. It can just be lip service.
Yeah.
How do you know the difference between, or how did you know the difference between that and somebody who genuinely did believe?
I mean, I could tell the way, first of all, the way when you talk to me, I could really tell. I mean, some guys lie, but I'm pretty good to sense, you know, the guys that are full of it. And then the actions, you know. The actions are, you know, he really, I had a pretty good summer league that year, that summer. And then I wasn't starting yet, but, you know, he was really talking to me a lot, and I could feel it, you know, I could feel that he was, excited to play me, and, my minutes just every month, you know, my minutes growing. I think that's in February that we traded, and Enes got traded to Oklahoma, and then I was starting.
When they traded Kanter, was that sort of like, okay, this is my team now? They're fully invested in me now. Is that what that meant to you?
I mean, it meant to me that, okay, they believe in me.
Yeah.
You know, so they give me an opportunity, and now I have to show that I can help this team win games.
Did your leadership role change with Gordon leaving, or did you always feel you were the leader of this team, whether he was here or not?
I mean, I think we're both leaders, yeah. You know, in different ways. But I feel like people, of course, now, I mean, people were looking up to Gordon, looking up to me, and I think now there's more eyes looking up to me, for sure. And it doesn't really change my approach. You know, I just got to make sure, like I said, show the example and poor guys towards the top.
When Gordon made a decision in free agency, what was the first conversation you had with Quinn, with Dennis, about, okay, like, we're the leaders of this group. How do we all go forward to get the rest of the group aligned that, okay, it's a different reality now?
I mean, we had a conversation even before, because we were trying to plan the different scenarios, you know. It wasn't really like a big surprise, you know. I mean, we were kind of like 50-50, you know. Mm-hmm. We weren't really sure. So we just, the best thing to do is to find the solutions. And so I know it was hard for Dennis, because when he announced it, the biggest free agents were already gone. I know Gallinari signed the day before, mm-hmm. in LA, so it was frustrating, but, you know, we try to build a team based on our identity. So I think we signed Tabo. We brought another few guys, Jonas, Ricky was already signed. Mm-hmm. So we just say, okay, we're here because of defense, and so we're gonna try to be an even better defensive team, and we got guys that are getting better offensively, and we bring Ricky, great playmaker, so we're gonna go and keep getting better. And the thing I was thinking is, since I've got here, we've got better every year, so the goal is to keep getting better.
I know that leading into that free agency period, Dennis, you know, he would run different things by Gordon. Would you be comfortable with this? Would you like it if we brought Ricky Rubio in versus this guy? I imagine they were doing the same thing with you. How do you feel about this player, how they might fit?
Yeah, and I think, I mean, when you...